You're listening to Discovering Multifamily, where we discuss all educational topics in commercial real estate with an emphasis on multifamily apartment investing via syndication. And now, your hosts, former NFL fullback Brian Leonard and Anthony Scandariato.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Discovering Multifamily Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Scandariato, coming at you live from North Jersey. Matt, you're in, do we like to call it South Jersey or Central Jersey?
What no, bro, that moved. See, and I have a Jersey joke, but I'll give it to you in a second. I'm in Pennsylvania now. And my thought on the North Central and South Jersey thing is that you said you're in North Jersey, so that must mean you must be north of the city, right? Because I believe that anyone that lives in New Jersey believes that where they live is Central Jersey, and anywhere south of them is South Jersey, and anywhere north of them is North Jersey. Because I talked to people that are like Cherry Hill that told me they live in Central Jersey. And I was like, you kind of don't, though. And I used to live in Bordentown, just south of Trenton, in like the Trenton-Princeton area, right? I lived there, and I thought that was Central Jersey. People are like, no, Edison, Central Jersey. You know, and then people in Edison are like, well, actually, we're not really, you know. So I don't think that there's clear lines, personally. There's really not. And so that's my Jersey opinion. But I'm not a Jersey resident anymore. I live in Pennsylvania. So
that's great. And a lot of our listeners are from New Jersey, so I'm sure they understood.
Right. The what exit thing is played out. But I mean, the Central South and North Jersey thing, I just happen to notice that. I'm like, you know, it's also that you could go by a fan base. Right. Like Eagles fans are South Jersey, obviously. Right. And then there's a line, like probably somewhere in the Princeton area, like north of there, you cross into Yankee land, you know, maybe you're above 195. I think that you get into Yankee, not Yankee, but Giants fans, yeah. You know.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Jets fans are from Brooklyn. So,
yeah, no, that's great. So yeah. Matt, Jersey native, no longer.
I'm not. Former New Jersey also native. Baltimore native.
Baltimore.
I've lived all over, man. I married an Italian girl from New Jersey, so I had to live in New Jersey for years. So I grew up in Baltimore.
Not by choice, huh?
Well, by love, because I love my wife, and so I did. And because when we got married, she was my sugar mama. We lived off of her salary while I built my business. So I would have lived, you know, wherever. I'd have lived in Detroit if she wanted me to. So whatever, because she was paying our bills while I built our business.
Nice. Things we do for our loved ones, man.
Things we do, you know.
That's right. So anyone who doesn't know Matt Faircloth, he's the founder of the DeRosa Group. He's been active in real estate since 2002, and I think you founded DeRosa in 06, right?
Yes.
Great. And he's got a visionary background. He's got a public authority in terms of seeing him on a lot of conferences and speakerships. Also largely in multifamily. I closed on a larger acquisition in Charlotte. I think it was, 336? Units?
A 336 unit, actually just up the road in Winston-Salem, which is the less known city about an hour north of Charlotte. It's in what we call the Piedmont Triad, which is Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and then another city that nobody's ever heard of unless you're in the furniture business, and that's called High Point. So High Point, Winston-Salem, Greensboro form the Piedmont Triad, and Winston-Salem is one of those, and that's where this property is.
Right. Well, we love North Carolina, so we've looked at a lot of deals down there.
Yeah.
And so how did you wind up in North Carolina from Pennsylvania, New Jersey? And obviously you started, you've been through cycles before.
Yeah.
So we're recording this in early 2021. Where mm-hmm. do you think the market is going? And I'd love to take a deep dive into your, latest acquisition, so the listeners can kind of understand how you put the deal together, how you raise the capital, what you're doing now.
Sure.
I'd love to go through that.
Yeah, man, we'll do that. Yeah, I've yet to dissect that deal publicly, and I'd love to do it here. So thank you for giving me the space to do it. Answer your questions earlier. Why North Carolina? You said why North Carolina and where's the market going, right? So let me answer those real quick. Why North Carolina? It's an extremely, it has been rated the most business friendly state in the country several times. It's up there Texas is up there too. I mean, there's a reason why Tesla is building a big old plant there and stuff like that, is that Texas is a super business friendly state. And like Texas, North Carolina has a lot of open land that is yet undeveloped. that could be turned into something that's currently undeveloped, you know, forest. And not that I want to like rip out all the forests in America, but there is opportunity to do that more of North Carolina. We're underpurposed or underutilized real estate, like old factories and stuff like that, that could be turned into something in North Carolina. Less so than you see in like, you know, New Jersey. In that, and it's also business friendly with regards to taxes, regulation, things like that. I'll make my Jersey friends jealous by telling you that in North Carolina, we typically pay anywhere between $300 to $500 a unit per year in real estate tax. I find that to be friendly. It also, North Carolina, interestingly enough, for those, I'll make a Jersey investor's head explode right here. North Carolina does not have any such a thing as a certificate of occupancy. It's not something that when you buy a property, you got to go and get a residential CO, or every time a tenant moves in, you got to get a CO, which is very common in New Jersey. You got to get a CO every time you reoccupy a property. Every time you buy a property, you got to get a CO for sale. That concept does not exist there. Now, there's still housing offices that if you have an egregious issue, tenants have a place to go to give them support, but it is there for tenants to be the first flag to raise, not a regulation authority to get in your face and say, hey, you moved a new tenant in, we need to inspect that property again and charge you $70 for an inspection, you know? So North Carolina, I find to be very business friendly for a lot of reasons. That's why North Carolina, it's also one last thing. It's centrally located on the East Coast. It's pretty much right at the belt of the United States. If you will, if Maine is the arm and Florida is the leg, it's kind of right at belt level. Which means that proximity wise and travel wise, it's good. It's equidistant from everybody. And it's seeing good migration from other states too, especially along the coastline. So that's right. Why North Carolina? Where's the market going, Anthony? Geez, man, I like to joke and say my crystal ball is broken. You know, I don't know. I mean, with regards to what? I mean, do I believe there's going to be a crash?
I guess I was referring more to, you've been in the business long enough to see cycles. Man. So you lived through 2008, you lived through Corona. Like, where are we at? Interest rates are still at,
I've seen it all, man. I've seen the run up. I've seen people running around talking about when's it going to crash in like 2016. You know, you're like, man, we're due. Like it's a roulette table and we're betting on double zero. Like, the double zero hasn't hit in a while, Anthony. I think it's due. You know, like, well, it doesn't work like that, really. And now, as I've seen it, I've seen a lot of different market cycles. Here's what I believe. And I ingest, say my crystal ball is broken, but I really don't know. And those that know, that tell you they know, are selling you something. I don't know either, but here's what I believe. I believe the fundamentals that are holding the market where it is now are fairly solid. I mean, aside from like, you know, the house of cards that our financial system is on, meaning like, you know, printed money and manipulated currency and manipulated interest rates. Aside from that, you know, if that house of cards remains stable enough as it has over the many, many years, aside from that, there are plenty of fundamentals in the market that I believe are going to keep it where it is. If not, drive prices further up. Right. Believe it or not, I'm one of these folks that I think prices have not yet hit where they're going to go. Here's why. Interest rates are not going to go anywhere anytime soon. And the powers that be, those that I know that watch interest rates, have not to indicate, people that are smarter than me, let's say Anthony, have not told me that interest rates are going anywhere. So that means the cap rates are probably going to stay way down. Right. So if that's the case, the only thing you got is NOI, right? For an apartment complex, because the apartment complex is evaluated on cap rate and net operating income. So NOI, I think, is going to overall increase. And the reason I say that is we're going to be facing inflation in this country in the next couple of years. And that is going to drive up expenses, yes, but it's also going to drive up income. It's going to drive up rental income, meaning rents are going to increase. As an apartment building owner, I'm happy about it. In thinking about the journey of middle America, I'm not happy about it because I believe things like a gallon of milk is going to become $8 and a gallon of gas is going to go to $4. And good for middle America, wages are going to go up. Because if you know, you watched the news today, the Biden administration is pushing for $15 minimum wage. They're going to get it. And the guy earning $15 is going to get a raise too. Everybody's going to, you know, middle America will get a wage increase. And apartment buildings are evaluated based on earned income, based on how much people earn. And so if everybody gets a raise, everybody's income goes up by $5, you know, hey, I got a big heart. I'd love it. I think I have to keep a lot of that. But unfortunately, I don't think they're going to. I think that what's going to happen is just the cost of everything is going to increase to follow that, those wage increases we will start seeing in our country, including rents and cost of living across the board. So that happens. That pushes up NOI. Cap rates stay down. Apartment building prices go up. So
right. And you use the term inflation and real estate, you know, in my opinion, and I'm sure in your opinion, are a hedge against inflation for those reasons that you just mentioned. So
yeah, it's a good reason. I mean, you know, you and I are preaching to the choir here, right? But at the end of the day, that's a good reason to buy real estate. And it's a good reason to buy a home or to buy real estate even now to lock in today's price at crack-a-lackey's low interest rates, you know, that aren't going anywhere anytime soon, to lock that in. Because I believe if inflation kicks in, the property that's worth $200,000 or $2 million today, the dollar's not going to go as far anymore because of inflation. So it's going to make that property just worth more. The dollar, it's going to take more dollars to do things soon because of inflation, because of how many dollars just got created, you know? We just like created more dollars, you know, like printed all this money, right? So it's got to go somewhere, and it's going to just circulate. It's going to just circulate in the world, all this money we just printed. And it's going to make everything more expensive because it's just going to take more dollars to get things done to do anything.
Right. So, no, and that makes sense. Whether for the good or for the bad, there's so many different perspectives.
You have a disclaimer, like, you know, the views and opinions expressed by Matt Faircloth are not necessarily the views and opinions. Who knows? That's the other thing. Who knows? I don't know. Nobody saw I was around through the 2008 crash. Nobody saw that baby coming. People claimed they did. And we all thought that the carousel had to stop at some point, but nobody saw that thing falling off a cliff like it did. Nobody saw COVID coming, right. Except for maybe Bill Gates, you know,
or some insiders, who knows?
Yeah, but nobody had COVID in their underwriting, and nobody saw that, right?
COVID reserves, what's that?
Yeah, COVID reserve, right? So there could be another right hook coming that we don't even see, you know, and we just have to take it on the chin and see what happens, you know?
Yeah, but the cool thing about our industry is that whatever is going on in the world, we adapt pretty quickly, because if we were only really shut down in terms of the capital markets, I would say maybe a month and a half, 2 months, and then we kind of figured it out.
I felt sorry for myself for a week or two, you know, drank a lot of bourbon. And then, but then after that, I was like, all right, okay, so now what? What are we going to do? Right. Well, darn it, if the tenants didn't figure out a way to pay the rent in April. Okay, great. The government's going to give them some money. Great. Okay, that got us through this thing. And just, I just had to have faith that we will, that whatever happens, I will figure it out. I don't go in blind and just gamble, but I do believe, and this in my 15 years of experience has taught me this, that those that panic will lose, and those that make rash decisions or choose to make no decisions at all and don't pivot are going to lose. So if you make rash action or take no action and bury your head in the sand like an ostrich, though, that's how you're going to lose. If you pivot and adjust and okay, what can I do, and don't panic and don't freak out and just, you know, focus on where you want to go, you get there. It's worked so far for me.
Right.
You know,
right.
Got me through the last 15 years.
Right. 100% agree. So let's talk about this deal, Matt. So how did you find it? Where did it come from?
Sure.
Did you put down all the money? How did that work?
Oh, yeah. I just wrote a check. That's it. Anthony, that's it. Wouldn't that be great if that was the end of the story? Yeah, I just found an apartment building and wrote a check. The end. We have an acquisitions manager, and we find that acquisitions is a strategic effort, and it's not something where we just, you know, buy anywhere in the continental United States. That's not what we do. We buy in a few different cities in America, but that's it. Right. And so our acquisitions manager had spent a lot of time boots on the ground in a market. And I recommend to any listener that has a target market they want to be in, brokers aren't going to take you seriously, even with, you know, with COVID running around, brokers aren't going to take you seriously until you go to the market and meet them face to face, look them dead square in the eye, you know, then that's how they'll remember you. So our acquisitions manager named Irve, he has a show on my YouTube channel called Market Hunter Thursday with Irve. And so he spent a lot of time in Winston-Salem and knocking on doors and talking to brokers and getting to the market and talking to property managers. And after doing that, we kind of got to the inside of the broker and brokers, and a deal came out, and the broker called us ahead of time, called him and said, "Hey, Irve, here's the deal. Here's what we got. We're going to be putting it out public on the market, but you know, because you've been really diligent about staying up with us, we'll let you do a preview." So we got a preview of the deal. They put it on our desk a week before it went on the market. And we underwrote it, and you know, we have an underwriter too, because I don't believe that multifamily is a single person sport, and this is a team sport. So we have like seven of us on my team. Irve and our underwriter got together and crunched the numbers in the deal. They saw that the current owner was just kind of being lazy about the building and just didn't want to really roll up his sleeves. And so he was just letting anybody rent there, dropped his rents really, really low just to let anybody, just so he would have no problems with occupancy. So he was charging like $150 below the market just because he didn't want to pay for marketing and didn't want to hustle and just, you know, wanted to be lazy about it. Wanted to go hands off. And you can be hands off in big multifamily, but the way you make good money is by being aggressive and pushing to keep things at the market and, you know, making improvements and making tenants happy and collect, you know, pushing to collect rents and stuff like that. This guy wasn't doing that. So we saw the opportunity to renovate because that was another thing he hadn't done. He's kind of was just letting it go and denying a lot of repair requests and things like that. So typical, you know, underserved asset. It was also right on the cusp of downtown Winston-Salem. Like you can stand on the rooftops. There's great pictures of me on our YouTube page of me standing on the roof of these buildings, and you can see the Winston skyline like right behind me. So it's literally right there on downtown. So I believe that it is a suburban feeling market, but I believe it's on a bubble of redevelopment coming in. So for all those reasons, the location worked, the condition of the asset worked, the rental position worked, and that. So just everything added up. And so we aggressively went after the deal. And we won. And what was interesting is we bought it. I mean, I'm going to throw out a big number, and I don't want to like knock anybody to their chair. I'm certainly not telling this to pound my chest. But before I even say the number that we bought it for, I submit to your audience that this was not my first, second, third, or eighth or ninth multifamily deal. We've done a lot of projects and see a scale in, right? So we bought it for $18.5 million. What was interesting, Anthony, is the seller had it under contract. I have like buyer seller dyslexia. I get them backwards, you know. Anyway, the seller had it under contract pre-COVID for $20.5 million. And that buyer fell out because they were trying to use pre-COVID financing called bridge debt, which isn't very common anymore. So they fell out. Seller sat on it for a couple months and then put it back on and had to take 18 and a half. So he was livid that he got a lot less than his number on this property. But we closed. We got it under contract. I'll go through the closing process, but put it under contract. Big value add plan. You know, property had like a swamp that used to be a pool, you know, and just like defunct, embarrassing playgrounds. So no real physical assets on the site. 336 units. And a typical rule of thumb is like 70 or 80 units equals one maintenance technician. Right. So this size property should yield somewhere between 3 to 4 maintenance technicians, probably 4 when you first buy it, because you're going to have a lot of old work orders and maybe use a few guys to turn units and stuff. This property had one technician, right, on 336 units, right? Poor guy, you know, he could not have put in 24 hours a day and kept up with all the work orders he was getting, you know.
Must have been making some big bucks then.
Oh, sure. I'm sure he was. No, I think he was just like resigned and cynical and willing to stay for the work and all that. But right. They were not bad. I doubt they were paying him the salary of 4 people. But
right.
So anyway, we got in, changed managers, and and change the business plan up that way. But yeah, I mean, I'll let you, guide the I talk too damn much, Anthony. I'm sorry.
This is great. So you got under contract. So you told us about the price. Got under contract. So wait, did they put it on the market or they?
No, this is fully marketed, best and final interview process tour. And we have not done a big. The last couple multifamily deals that we did, no, that's not true. This one was that way, was best and final and buyer seller interview and stuff like that. We've done a few that way that we've won, and we've done a few where it was just, you know, no buyer interview or anything like that. Just, you know, you gave the right number, you win the contract. In that, but this was that way where they got like 17 offers on the place. So I guess I'm the biggest idiot because I was willing to pay the most for the property, right? You know, we had the business plan that worked, and we're making good money on the property now. So I guess we're the winner. But we came in, interviews with the buyer, submitted long questionnaires about our financial background and our financial wherewithal and all this stuff, submitted all that. And then our application got chosen out of the stack, which was exciting.
Excellent. So it sounds like you had to raise it. And Matt, you do syndications, right? So I'm assuming you raised some capital to put the down payment down.
Yes.
For the equity. So what was that process like?
Right. All joking aside, I do well for myself, but I did not write a check to buy this property all of myself. We syndicated it, meaning like we just passed a big giant hat around to a bunch of investors that are in our network that were looking for alternative returns on their money and looking to diversify themselves a bit in that. So we bought the, you know, we that's how we put it together. It was an $18.5 million purchase price. And believe it or not, Anthony, it was a like $12 million equity raise. And the reason for that is because we raised all the construction capital in equity too. Back in the day, like, you know, I say back in the day, it feels like 10 years ago, but it was only last year, pre-COVID, you could borrow a lot of You could borrow a lot of construction money from banks. But that's changed a lot recently. And you can again now a bit. I mean, we're sitting here middle of March in 2021, but just over a year ago, you could borrow like 100% of the construction from bank, and that would really limit the equity stack you had to put together. We've changed that model, even though bridge debt's back in, and that's, you can get it under slightly not as appealing terms, but it's still there. It's still something that we haven't touched yet because it's high risk. Bridge debt is. So we've stuck with just doing agency debt deals with, so we borrowed from Freddie Mac, on this product they have called the Freddie Floater. And so we just bought that, did the raised all the money we needed for construction, and then closed on the property, you know, raised enough to close, which was like $7.5 million, and then raised enough for the first round of construction. Interestingly enough, Anthony, we've still not raised all the money we need for that deal because we just don't need it. We have enough construction dollar to go through like April or May of next year of 2022. So I don't want to pay investor debt service or investor pref on that money yet. So I'm not going to raise it till we need it. Which is a benefit, a tool you can use when you're not raising all your construction money. We're not borrowing all your construction money from a lender when you're getting it through equity. You can kind of raise it as you need it if you choose to.
Excellent. And so you did, and I believe the SEC rules are a year after you close. Is that correct? If you did, and you did a 506C, if you could tell our audience what that is.
Yeah, sure. We did a 506C in that. So 506C, we used to do 506B, which some people say B stands for buddy, right? And so we did a 506C, but we've done B up till now. What B is that, like, and the reason they call it B for buddy is because these are your friends and family, people that you have a pre-existing substantive relationship with. Those are the 506B offerings. Now, that's where a lot of syndicators start. That's where we started, because we had a lot of pre-existing relationships. And also, what's great is the SEC doesn't define what a pre-existing is. You know, it doesn't say, what does that mean? Well, I mean, I'm not saying this is the way we defined it, but it could mean, you know, like, hey, Anthony, I see you're, I love that shirt you're wearing, and I see you live in North Jersey. Yeah, I do live in North Jersey. Oh, you're from Baltimore? Yeah, I'm from Baltimore. Great. Hey, listen, we're buying multifamily apartment buildings. Would you like to, you know, not that it does that, but the SEC does not define, and a lot of syndicators define what their rules around it are, but the SEC does not have written rules on how many conversations you need to have with people or how many hoops you got to jump through, whatever. To have a pre-existing relationship. But if you feel like you can document that and you feel like you're comfortable, then you can raise as much money as you want from non-accredited investors, meaning that they don't meet certain income or net worth standards that make them accredited, right? Which is, it's tough. It does thin the herd a bit if you do accredited only. The big benefit if you do accredited only is you can solicit, meaning like I can shout it from the mountaintop that I'm raising money for apartment buildings, which I have a YouTube channel. You know, I've built a pretty good brand. And so, and my wife Liz has the Invest Her Nation that she's built. So her and I both have a pretty good network. And so being able to solicit helps us out a lot. And so that's why we've gravitated towards C. And I think eventually every big syndicator that I know eventually starts doing C's because you want to be able to build your investor database and expand out further. So this one was a C.
Excellent. No, that's great. So that was a decent amount of money raised. How, with the C process, how long did it take you to raise? I guess you were under contract. So typically you have a due diligence period and then a closing period, maybe financing contingencies. So how long did the money raise take in that process? And what were some of the avenues? Obviously, you have a YouTube channel, you have your platform and your brand. But I guess for the specific deal, did you market the specific deal and say, hey, minimum investment, $50,000, projected IRR, 15%, cash on cash? Like, how did you market your deal? Was it on YouTube? Was it on Facebook? And where did most of the investments come in from?
I'm curious. So we did Facebook. I'm not poo-pooing the people that do, but I typically put pictures of my kids on Facebook. Okay. Like I'll put business out sometimes and sometimes begrudgingly, all right, I'll put out a deal that we just closed or whatever. I'll put out a few pics here and there, but I'm not one of these folks that uses Facebook as a means to promote their business. I mean, it's just a little, you know, like act like you've been there before kind of thing, you know, like, so a lot of times when I see these things, people are acting like it's their first apartment building they ever bought. Oh, look what we did. Like, that's great. You know, but I don't want to, come off like that. Now, so to me, Facebook's a different tool, you know, than that. So we did Facebook pay-per-click ads, which you can do. I don't say it one more time. I'm not poo-pooing people that use Facebook for marketing. There's people that I know that own thousands of units and have raised a lot of their money off of Facebook, from their Facebook network and their Facebook friends. God bless. Not what I want to do. Through YouTube, what we did was we just shot informational videos about the property or just, hey, do you like this property? Well, here's what it is. And do you want to invest? And this is for accredited only and 506C offering. So we would put that out there. We did some Google pay-per-click ads. We did LinkedIn too. Those worked kind of. The YouTube ad did really well in producing. And as did just our team. We put together a really, really great team that all had Rolodexes of their own. And so myself and the other co-owners were able to raise the money just through our network. In addition, it helped that we're coming out of COVID. We were kind of like middle, you know, maybe rounding second base of COVID when this happened, and that we were raising at the end of the year. Those two things were an unexpected perk. What I mean by that is that people were looking for a COVID resistant place to invest. This deal happened to be really COVID resistant. So we promoted that. Secondly, we closed towards the end of last year and people were looking for negative K1s, and we were able to provide that because we did a cost seg right after closing. Right. And because I still had more equity to raise right after closing. We closed in October, but we were bringing money in through December because we already had the cost seg done, and I could tell people exactly what their negative K1 was going to be. And that, so we raised a good bit for construction right after we had closed the deal for people that were looking for places to get those passive losses, you know, the coveted negative K1s. So
that's great. So if you had to guess between the existing network, between a B and a C for, and when I mean C, it's the accredited investors that you didn't have a relationship with, but now you do. What was the split, like 50-50, or what would you say?
Well, what was interesting, Anthony, is that when I did a lot of 506B, almost like 50 or 60% of the money came from self-directed IRAs. So if you and your listener, if you or your listener base are looking to do deals and want to do 506B with your friends, have some really good IRA custodians lined up, right? Because a lot of non-accrediteds keep their wealth in their retirement account. And it is what it is. And it's great. You know, it's a great place to keep your wealth and it's a great place to invest from, right? A lot of accrediteds keep their wealth in cash and in equities and in investments and things like that. So we found that when we did a 506C, we started making new friends in that. And our old friends that were non-accrediteds, we ended up partnering up with a broker dealer that helped us sell some of our shares to non-accrediteds through an offering called a class CF.
What is that?
A reg CF. Nobody knows about this thing. I feel like I discovered like a new element or something like that, because no other syndicator I'm talking to knows about it. So the Jobs Act from 2016 that Obama put in place, maybe it was 2013. I don't know, whatever it is. Obama put something called the Jobs Act out there, right? It was before 16, because he wasn't president in 16, right? Anyway, this is from Obama, and it's called the Jobs Act. And the Jobs Act really is what birthed a lot of the crowdfunding movement, okay? And so it allowed for more of middle America to put dollars into startups. And it allows for startups to solicit money from people instead of going to venture capital to use crowdfunding portals. And so Republic is a crowdfunding portal. And what they do is they will aggregate a big group of investors of non-accrediteds, and they're allowed to do it through Reg CF. It allows each company to raise up to $1 million, and they just raised it to $5 million. But it was $1 million up until January this year. And you can raise up to $1 million using Reg CF and raise money from anybody, from non-accrediteds, accrediteds, anybody. And what's great about working with companies like Republic that we used, is that you can put a small investment, like $1,000 is what the amendment, like you can invest in that deal we just did for $1,000, a non-accredited can. It's a broker dealer, we had to pay them their fee and all that. So you gotta pay that, but it was worth it to get, something for our non-accredited investor base to have a means to invest in the deal. So it's kind of a way to kind of have your cake and eat it too.
Excellent. Learn something new every day. I have no idea about that.
There's a lot of strings, a lot of hoops, I'm sure. A lot of paperwork. It was hard. It would have been hard to do it if we were under a timeline, because it took like 3.5 months to get it set up in that. So that's probably the problem. You don't see a lot of syndicators on there is because they have yet to figure out how to collapse all the documents and the onboarding process to the point where it makes sense for a syndicator to use it, because the beginning, middle, and an end is too long than it would. A syndicator, you want to be raised in like 45 days. The portals I'm talking about, the crowdfunding portals, can't do that.
Got it. Excellent.
The micro portals that are like Republic and stuff like that.
Right. No, that makes sense. So what's next for you and your group as we wind down the show?
I'm going to buy a yacht and go into charter fishing.
Down in Florida, right?
That's it. Retiring. No, man, we have aggressive goals for 2021. We want to acquire $50 million in new assets under management, probably be acquiring a lot more in North and South Carolina, maybe something in Virginia, probably more in Kentucky. So you will see aggressive growth from DeRosa Group. I'm not just being cocky, but I feel like we're just getting started, because I've got a great team. And me and that team have done great things in 2020. And that, so I think that, I want to stay with the team that I got and keep growing and expanding. We're also going to be rolling. And I like everybody and their mama's doing a fund right now. I mean, I'm doing my own private equity fund. A lot of these syndicators doing funds, right? And I know why they're doing it, but we're doing a real fund that's going to be invested in other things outside of multifamily. So we're going to be rolling out a true diversified fund that's not going to just invest in a lot of my deals. We're going to invest in, the fund is going to invest in several assets, and we're going to offer something that it's been very hard for syndicators to offer up until now, which is liquidity. Meaning, like, if people call me and want their money back, I can give it to them with a fund. With a syndication, it's very hard to do. So I'm super excited to get that off the ground. A lot of secret sauce in there I can't talk about yet, but there's going to be really cool stuff, some really cool returns, and a lot of benefits that syndications just can't offer. But it's going to give exposure to the benefits of multifamily along with a few other asset classes.
Excellent. Well, look forward to learning more about it, Matt. How can people find you?
It's pretty straight up. Just go to DeRosaGroup.com, DEROSA group.com, DeRosaGroup.com. I've also got a free giveaway. If you guys want to just take your cell phone out and text the word DeRosa, DEROSA, to the number 66866, we'll send you all kinds of free resources, including some PowerPoint presentations that I've done, including some statements and letters from our property manager regarding COVID, bunch of other non-YouTube videos that we've done you can't get anywhere else. So it's good stuff. So check that out. And you can also get a link to join our insiders group, which is a private Facebook group with direct access to me and my team. So
excellent. And we'll put a link, well, not a link, but we'll put the texting number in the show notes on social media. Yeah.
They can go to DeRosaGroup.com/insiders, but either way, I would do the free resources thing, cause you get a bunch of free stuff that I get nothing for, but if you just go to there and get the free resources, that's just, you can just get free stuff. I don't care. Go get the free stuff. It's fine too.
Free stuff is great. Yeah, I would encourage all my listeners to check out Matt's platform and his website and get some free stuff. And, if you liked what you heard and or saw today, if you could please give us a rating and review on iTunes, because it helps Matt and my message get out to a larger audience. That's just the way iTunes works and does the rankings. So we would really appreciate that. And yeah, when you're $50 million more under management, love to have you on the show next year, Matt.
Yeah, I'd come back with more battle scars and more stories for you, Anthony. Thank you for having me today.
This was excellent. Thank you.